calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust. Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be David Holly and Mike Gregg. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Blackburn. Before that, we'll look back at the Sunderland match for Fulham in the FA Cup last Saturday. After that, we will have another edition of the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, which includes us debating questions I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for the fans to comment on. We also will do a section of Cottage Talk Quick Shots, and we do have some breaking Fulham news that I will mention to start the show. But before we do that, and I can hear David laughing in the background, a couple things. First of all, very sorry we could not do a live Sunderland post-match show. Unfortunately, the timing could not work out to watch the replay. And honestly, I want to be able to do a proper show. You know, that means it's all watching the match via replay or live, and we did not have that ability to do that. So that's why I actually canceled the show on Sunday. I did not want to do it. I just felt it was the right thing to do. But we will be talking about it today on the show with two men that were there, Mike Gregg and David Holly. So they will be sharing their thoughts on the Sunderland match. So we can still talk about it with just a few days delayed. That's number one. Number two, I want to thank all the Fulham supporters that have contacted me, email, Facebook, on Twitter, wishing me luck and my team, the New England Patriots, on Sunday. This is a big deal for me and my family. The only way to describe it to Fulham supporters would be this is the Europa League final for me. The Patriots have been there several times, but it is a big deal for me and my family. It's really the first time that my kids can really enjoy it. And the Super Bowl is Sunday. I'm looking forward to it. Real nervous, but I want to thank all of you for contacting me and wishing my team luck, wishing me luck, wishing my family luck. I just want to say a big thank you to you all. That the game actually starts, I want to say, about 11:30 in England, and probably won't get over till like 3 o'clock in the morning if you're going to stay up. But if you do, hopefully, my sake, the Patriots will win, but it's going to be a great game. Looking forward to it. But before we do anything, I just wanted to just say thank you to everyone that has sent me messages. I've gotten so many of them. I can't thank you all enough. All right, I'm going to bring on my other co-host, but first I will start with you, David. How you doing, my friend?
Hello, Russ. Good to be back, and I'm glad to hear you're fine, because I was disturbed in the middle of the night by some gargantuan tweet from Yanis about the legend that's Russ. I thought, my God, is it an obituary? What's happened to Russ here? But Russ, Yanis, bless him, just decided to give you a big shout-out in the middle of the night, so it was good to see how appreciated you were. But it's been a hectic week, as always. Last week was, obviously, with three matches for me. And Saturday, obviously, I had to fight off and lost again to another subway. This time, I end up throwing half my food over the platform at Doncaster Station.
Great.
See, travel doesn't do much for me, because after the Sunderland match, I've had a rotten cold. I spent my birthday in bed grumping about it, as you probably know. And then we had an earthquake here, of all things, you know. Not to be usurped by your blizzards and everything, we had an earthquake, and ever since my electric's been a bit funny, so if I get cut off in the middle of the show, I've got to reset the electrics, it's all tripped, and I'll be back. But I thought your snow was fantastic, you know. I mean, I'm jealous. I'm sure it's a pain for you guys, but we never get such fantastic snow like that here in the UK. I mean, we get a sprinkling and the whole country grinds to a halt, you know, but there's some fantastic pictures and everything, and, you know, a wonderful wintry scene. But, you know, here we are anyway, so good to be back as always, and look forward to doing the show.
I'm looking forward to it too, David. Thanks for also mentioning how much snow we have. I'm looking out my window, David. I'm seeing, I would say, 2+ feet of snow. And what's great about over here is that the snow removal here is unbelievable. You know, they actually plowed us out the next morning. You know, business was open as usual, everything open. Kids were home from school, but besides that, everything else was pretty much open. The roads were open. Everything was plowed. It's just that we're so used to it that even 2 feet of snow is really, you know, again, it's a big deal, but we do move on and we take care of it. And I do know that if it did happen in England, it would be a different story. I get that, because you don't get it as much as we do. But it is nice to look at, and I do like this time of season as well, even with all the snow. All right, I got to bring on our other co-host, Mr. Gregg. How you doing, my friend?
John, very good, Russ. Enjoyed your photographs of Snowmageddon. Yeah, and as David says, if we had even an inch of that, we'd be in trouble over here. So, well done for everyone.
No, listen, I get that. I've heard that from so many people when they saw exactly how much snow we've had, and I've shared pictures of my kids playing in the snow, and it's coming up 2 feet on them, and it really is it's quite amazing. It's nice, you know. Again, I actually appreciate the snow. I like it. You get sick of it over time, but this is the first major snowstorm we've had, and it's really not that big of a deal. Like I said, you know, I can drive around like nothing ever happened, and that's what's great about over here. We're really prepared for storms like this, so it's a good thing. All right, guys, enough talking about the Patriots, Snowmageddon, other things. It's time to talk about Fulham. And, Mike, I'm going to start with you. David and I were chuckling before the show started because we actually do have some breaking news. Mark Fotheringham has left the club. What are your thoughts about this, Mike?
Yeah, I saw it about a quarter of an hour before the show started. It's to be expected, wasn't it, really? Apart from his sub-appearance the other week, he's not had a look in. And just best that they could agree something that, you know, he can go off and find himself another team to go and play for, because he wasn't good enough for us. And it was a panic signing, be it because he knew McGaff, obviously. But it pretty much summed up the start of McGaff's season here, really. You know, absolutely made no sense. He had no kind of record good enough for a team in the Championship, and it's best for all parties he's gone, and you know, we can put this chapter away and forget about, which is potentially one of the worst signings in 30 odd years of supporting the club. He really was at the standard we are, you know. There's obviously worse players when we're in the bottom division, but yeah, it was embarrassing, quite frankly. And so, yeah, good news to start the weekend, along with other good news we've had, you know, with extensions for yep. players. And, you know, I know lots of people want signings. I don't think they're going to get them, but, you know, it's good news anyway.
I think this is good news. And listen, it's good news for Mark Fotheringham as well. He can now find another club. And best of luck to him. You know, again, the official notice on the article on the Fulham website basically says the club can today confirm that Mark Fotheringham's contract has been terminated by mutual consent. Everyone at Fulham Football Club would like to wish Mark all the very best for the future. So, best of luck to him. And you know, again, I wish him the best. It just wasn't the right fit. You know, again, you talk about the level that we're at. You know, we should be getting players better than Mark Fotheringham, and it probably was an extremely poor signing. David, over to you. What are your thoughts about this?
I'm not sure if I could agree completely with Mike, because my memory hasn't gone yet, and I can remember some stinkers. I mean, he's definitely down there, but I think, Mike, I would take your Mark Fotheringham, and I'd raise you to an Adil Chihi, actually, to be honest with you. I think that's pretty much on the same level, and we have had some stinkers over the years, but it was obvious that, you know, he's not going to get any game time now, especially we've got Fofana for the end of the season, and of course Tunnicliffe back as well, and unfortunately, obviously, we mentioned in a bit, we have Emerson as well around, but he won't be around for a few weeks.
That's
we've
right. We'll be talking about
that. Those positions. So it's going to be hard to see how he would ever get a go, you know. And all we want to be doing as a footballer is playing football, and you know, I'm sure he could play at a lower level or a different club. And at his age, at his time, sort of in the later part of his career, he wants to be playing, I'm sure, as well. So it's good for him, and, you know, wish him the best. It's not his fault he came to us, you know, as such. It's not, you know, we didn't force him to come, you know, here, so to speak. He was offered the position, and I'm sure he would gladly took it. But, you know, it's the right thing to do. And I'd imagine that, you know, every little bit off the wage bill helps as well at this point.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, David. And listen, you know, nothing against him. Let's just wish him the best of luck moving forward. The team can move on, and he can move on, and we'll, you know, again, we'll see what happens. I do agree with Mike mentioned, you know, not to expect too much coming in, and I would definitely agree with Mike on that, and that's going to lead me to open up the section I call Cottage Talk Quick Shots and talk about a player that actually is coming, or has come, I shouldn't say is coming, has come. And David, I'm going to go right to you. Let's talk about Ashley Jazz Richards, who's been brought in on loan from Swansea City for 1 month. He's a right back. What are your thoughts about this move?
Well, there's been some conjecture about this because I asked Mike earlier and he thought he might be left back, and someone else said he thought he was left footed but plays right back, and Wikipedia says he plays right back. Because to me, I would have thought right back, you know, Grimm has been coming into his own, getting stronger and stronger, and we have Hoogland getting closer to fitness. So I'm a little bit surprised that we've kind of moved now at this stage. If anything, it would be left back. But then, you know, you do have Amabiesa coming back as well, and he could play Kavanagh there. So, you know, I'm obviously Kit knows him well from, you know, Wales set up.
Right.
And perhaps he feels he can do something, but I would be very surprised if he's going to throw him into the team, to be honest with you, because, as I say, we've been very settled at the back. That has been, you know, probably one of the strengths of the last period that we've had. We've been going into matches with the same back five. And yes, I think there is quite a lot of people who have been saying, well, let's get Hoogland back in when he's fit. But Grimmer hasn't disgraced himself. He has been getting better game on game. So I imagine, you know, he's here for cover maybe, or a view to see what he can do. But I can't think of much else really at this point.
You know, it's a very interesting move. And you bring up Jack Grimmer playing well, you know. You know, we have stability there. What are you going to do? And, Mike, I want to ask you about this because, again, I find it a curious move. You know, again, like David mentioned, that that kid obviously knows him from Wales, and I think he's coming here to play. You know, I get the feeling, you know, he's coming here to play. So what does that mean? Does that mean that that we're going to be seeing more of him than, say, Jack Grimmer? You know, what about Tim Hoogland? What do you think about this move, and what do you think it means?
Well, I think initially I thought it was for cover, and I still think it is. I mean, they've been going on about Hoogland and Amberetta being close and close and close to coming back, and it always seems to be a week or two away. So to bring a player in for a month, the other guys still have to have some training games, it makes sense, especially when you see Pasley's gone out on loan, so that's one less right back that we have in the squad. So if Grimmer got injured, you're left with Zevatek, probably. So, because Bowser doesn't look as if he's near the team, it looks like he'll be on his way soon. So it makes sense. It gives a chance to have a look at him, see how he fits in with the squad. He has played right and left back for Swansea this year. He's played about four or five games in the Premier League. So, you know, he's been around a little while. He's 23, I think he is. And he hasn't played that many games, you know, over the last few years. But it's a no-gamble loan, it's cover. But it might also be to give Grimmer a rest. I mean, what we have to remember about young players is that a lot of these guys have come straight into the team. I know Grimmer's been on loan. But to play week in, week out does take a strain on the young players. And, you know, it might have contributed to LVC's hamstring injury a few weeks ago.
Good
and
point.
It might be a case they're looking at the stats of the players, because they're always, you know, checking them, weighing them, blood tests and everything. And Grimmer might be struggling a bit. I don't know. So it could be just to give him a rest, or, you know, have support for him if he can't play. So, you know, I don't have a problem with the loan. I mean, I do actually think he will start tomorrow. I think Grimmer, which will be disappointing for me because I do like Grimmer. And they have been playing well, but it's a month, and I think they might try and get him a few games in. But I do think it's mainly there as support and just to see if he fits in with the squad.
Okay, so you don't see this as a replacement, Mike. Even though, again, it's only a month loan, you see this as cover, and we'll see what he can bring us.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the club make a big thing about checking players out, making sure they fit in with the squad, and you know, a lot of the players who have come in over the last few years have been disruptive or have caused little cliques within the squad, and they want to see how this young lad comes in and fits in. I'm pretty sure that's why he's there for a month, and being a youth loan, I think that allows us to extend it again if we need him. And I'm not convinced Amberetta and Hoogland, despite what Kit says, are anywhere near starting a game. So, you know, another cover at fullback is fine by me.
Okay. Fair enough. And we'll see how this plays out. But I see where you're going on that, Mike. All right, I'm going to go right back to you again. I saw this story yesterday, and I actually saw some information about this on Twitter a few days prior to that. Again, here was this article on CottagersConfidential.com, and it is entitled, Emerson Hyman Out Until April with a Broken Collarbone. Here's the article. Goal.com is reporting that the 18-year-old will miss 6 weeks with the injury. If you watched any of the CONCACAF Under-20 World Cup, this is directly from the article, qualifying tournament, Emerson Hyman was one of the bright spots for the USA. Once the squad switched to a 4-4-2, Hyman was given free range to roam in Boston midfield in most of the matches against an overmatched Aruba. He looked like the second coming of Zidane. I like that line. In the final minutes of the clinching qualification game against El Salvador, he came off with an injury which is now being reported as a broken collarbone. If this is confirmed, he would expect to miss 6 weeks, not make his return until April. Again, this has not been reported from the club. This is coming from an article on CottagersConfidential.sbnation.com. Mike, what are your thoughts about this news, about this potential injury? Again, this hasn't been mentioned from the club yet. This is just, I guess you could say, speculation at this point, but it is being reported that he could be out for a significant amount of time.
It's obviously disappointing for him. From all reports, he played really well for the USA, and you know, I saw some of his tweets, and he looked really happy, enjoying his time. And the only plus point is that if it's a broken collarbone, at least it isn't a dislocated shoulder or something like that, because that's an injury that can come back, you know, whenever. A collarbone, once it sets, it should be fine. But it's going to set him back, obviously. But I do wonder, first team-wise, where he quite fits in at the moment. I mean, let's remember he is only 18. And I think he would struggle at the moment, given the six players we've probably got fighting for those four places. So, disappointing for him. I'm not sure the first team is going to miss him that much, because I wasn't expecting him to come back into the squad, to be perfectly honest. But hopefully, it's all well and good in a few, you know, in 6 weeks, and he gets a few more games in before the summer, and he'll come back next season ready and fresh for the challenge for the championship next year, because I think he will be a key player next season.
I think he will too, Mike. And before I go to David, I want to ask you this, because I believe his contract, you've actually done a really nice job of putting up all the contracts. I believe Hyman's is up after next season. Is that correct?
Without looking at it, yeah, I'm pretty sure. But I'm fully expecting him to get an extension over the next few months, because what they're doing is they're going through all the 18, 19-year-olds who all have another year left as well. So they won't want to kick off next season with just a year left. So fully expect him to get an extension.
Okay, that was going to be my next question, because I think they need to look at that as, you know, soon, like you said, within the next couple of months with Emerson Hyman. He's a player that I want to see at Fulham for a long time, and I think they need to really look into that sooner than later. David, what are your thoughts about this injury? Are you on the same wavelength as Mike that, you know, again, he probably wasn't going to feature much the rest of the season with the first team?
Yeah, I think that's probably does sum it up, really. It's a shame for him personally, because obviously don't want to see anyone get injured or hurt. I could have almost perhaps seen him going out on loan for the latter half of the season, or for a period anyway, because he is, you know, unfortunately, it's funny, you know, because he started the season really well playing in the first team, and he's kind of fallen down the pecking order a little bit. But Kit's gone for this kind of bigger, stronger centre midfield at the moment, so. Yeah, I think he would struggle to find a place in the team at the moment. So it's not such a big miss for the team, but it obviously is a shame for him. But I hope a speedy recovery, and we see him back soon.
I agree with all that. And you know what? You know, I was the one that said I wanted him to wait a year before he started playing with the first team. So, again, I agree with what Mike said, that I don't see him featuring much because of the players in front of him right now. I just want to see him get fit, get back to normal, and I do want to see Fulham get an extension for front of him and hopefully extend him for a longer period of time to get him at Fulham for a while and you know and also to protect the club in case he wants to move on, because there has been speculation over the last month that there are possibly teams in Germany that could be interested in him. That's the only reason why I'm bringing up the contract thing. I think Fulham need to get a contract in front of Emerson Hyman soon. Like Mike said, within the next couple of months, get him signed up, extend him. Please extend him. I think he's a player you want to be part of your core. All right, let's move on. And, guys, I saw this story today, and, David, I'll go right back to you. You know, again, I found this curious. I saw it in the London Evening Standard. The title of the story is Fulham to Start Riverside Stand Expansion After Next Season. And here's from the article from Alex Miller. Fulham are expected to begin the long-awaited expansion of the Riverside Stand at the end of 2015-2016 season. The club received planning consent for the development, which will increase capacity from 27,500 to 30,000 in July 2013 when they originally went through the planning process. The work will also give Fulham an additional VIP and entertainment facilities. Club officials have yet to confirm an official time scale surrounding the project, but it's understood that the expansion work will see construction initially take place around the current stand. The plans make provision for a riverside walk along the Thames from Putney to Hammersmith, and a riverside cafe will also be built as part of this development. All right, David, again, this is from the London Evening Standard. This isn't from the club. What are your thoughts on this story about the riverside stand?
Well, we've heard a lot, and it does seem to be dragging its heels a bit. And I do wonder, as the cynic I am, whether it would have dragged its heels as much had we stayed in the Premier League. Obviously, you know, at the club, they want to move ahead in the long term, because long term we have to be ambitious. But in the short term, I guess we don't need the capacity as it stands. So they're not in a great rush to get it done, and maybe this timescale fits in with the club's own sort of secret timescale to get back to the Premier League or something like that. So I could imagine that. Not sure about the 27,500. Mike will probably be able to correct me on all these things, because I know he has regular meetings with the club. I believe
right.
our official capacity is 25,700, but I was told
that's what I thought it was.
We can actually get in. They probably swapped the digits over. But I'm told we can actually get 26,000 and something in, but we have to keep so many seats empty every game because of safety rules, and Mike will probably know about this. It's something to do with, because all the access is only on one side of the ground, we're actually not allowed to sell every seat. So 25.7 is the most we're allowed at the moment, but we could actually get just over 26 in, someone tells me. But obviously that would be, you know, 30 would be a reasonable leap, and I think in our current sort of medium term, that would be enough for us, because if we can get back to the Premier League, it's going to take a bit of time probably to build the crowds back up anyway.
No, it's a good point. Good point. And, Mike, over to you. When I saw the figure at 27,500, I thought it was 25,000. That was the first thing that stood out to me. Again, it's just a report. It isn't official. What are your thoughts on this? And do you have more information that it would be, say, 25,500, like David said? You know, again, because that was the first thing that stood out to me. I didn't think that figure was right.
Well, I mean, it pretty much sums up the report, to be honest. I mean, it's, you know, fact-checking from the Standard is not something they're very good at. So forgetting the capacity, because it is 25.6 or 25.7, because of the reasons David says, you know, for safety reasons. They can fit in, squeeze everyone in, you know, but that's the official capacity. But this is a nothing story. On Twitter, I asked the reporter, did he get anything from the club this week? And he came back and he said what it was, he got a tip yesterday from a solid source outside the club that work would start next year. Now, as you may know, I'm on the Fulham Supporters Trust, and
that's
we
right.
meet the club monthly. Yeah, we meet the club monthly. And this is number one topic we always talk to them about. And yes, it's frustrating that the club have not made an official announcement that they're going to start work. They have all the plans in place, you know, a lot of the permits and everything. There are a few issues not related to planning that they have to iron out. And I can't go into that because it's, you know, they don't want it in the public domain, but they are working on it. They're desperate to get this stand started. Now, the problem is, because it's dragged on, there's not going to be enough time between now and the summer for major works to start. But what it will do is, if they get these last few barriers down, come the summer, they will start preparational work. There's a lot of environmental stuff that they have to do and other bits and pieces before they can even put a spade in the ground. So they can start some work in the summer, but the major work will start towards the end of next season and then, as it says, into the summer. So it's a bit of a non-story in a way, because there's no quotes from the club. He hasn't got it from the club. And there's a lot of these stories that these papers now just put out. They nick a quote from somewhere and then a week later they put it on the web. And, of course, it gets everyone going. My feeling is the club want to build the stand. They want to, you know, McIntosh, you can see he's frustrated in the meetings. He just wants to get on with it and build it. But people have to accept now that it's going to take longer. Originally it was going to take 18 months to build. It's now going to take 2 years. So if we're lucky, beginning of 2017-18 season, we might have a stand. But they are working on these last few problems before they can officially announce who they're going to build it with, because they have to go through a quick tender process again, which they say isn't a problem with the parties they're working with. And so, yeah, it's frustrating seeing this, because we keep asking the club to make an official announcement, but they don't want to do it until they can actually say, yes, bang, this is what we're going to do. And we've got another meeting Tuesday with them, and we're trying to get the answers out of them again. But this doesn't help in a way, because it just builds up some resentment towards the club for, they're delaying because we're in the Championship. They're delaying because of this. They're delaying because Khan doesn't want to build it. They do want to build it, but it's just, you know, it's not an extension. It's a great big stand, and there's a lot of things to do.
Right. You know, and listen, it's a complicated situation. I'm glad that you really went into detail with that, Mike. And, that's why I'm glad that I had you on for this specific show to talk about this, because, again, you read something. But I know, it's funny. The minute I knew that you were on, I thought about it. I definitely need to talk to you about this, because I knew you would have more information. So again, let's take the story for what it is. But like you mentioned, I put more stock on what you shared, Mike. Seriously, because like you said, you meet with a club, you know what's going on. So they might not be sharing all the information with us, but that's fine. I trust trust the Fulham Supporters Trust, which is a great organization. You guys do a wonderful job and really get involved. And it's credit to you and everyone else involved with the Supporters Trust to meet with the club and stay in touch with the club. I think it's great what you guys do. All right, well, again...
Yeah, I'd say, Russ, yeah, can I just say...
Sure, go ahead.
To anyone, because, all I was going to say is that, the Trust gets criticised a little bit, but we do push them to try and get answers. And our feeling is that they do want to build it. But as soon as that changes, as soon as we get an inkling that... something's not right, we won't be quiet about it. We're pushing them because we want the stand built as well. So to anyone listening, we will keep you up to date as much as we can, and hopefully the club will announce something soon. But we just have to be patient on that front.
No, listen, I agree with you. And I asked Shad Khan over the summer, and I could just tell, again, by our conversation, that he was serious about building this, Mike. There's no doubt in my mind that again, this is last summer, but the plans to build the Riverside Stand are, again, very important to the future of Fulham Football Club. It sounds like it's a timing thing, but I got asked even at that time, do you think he's being honest with you? I said, he's absolutely being honest with me. It's a vital part of the future of the club. Of course they want to build it. And it's just a matter of when. There are so many factors involved. So, I know that you and the Trust will be on top of this, Mike. There's no question about that. I'm glad that you shared that part about the Trust. All right, let's move on, guys. and I want to talk about a couple other things before we move on and talk about the Sunderland match, because I definitely want to spend some time on that. So I'll just go to each one of you with each one of these subjects and just go through it fairly quickly. And, David, I want to get your thoughts about the contract extension for Fulham defender Dan Byrne, which will see him at the club until the summer of 2016. What are your thoughts about this, David?
I think it's a it's a cautiously optimistic move. Dan Byrne was, you know, the great white hope, as to coin a cliche at one point. But after he'd been back a few weeks or a few months and playing, you know, there was a few kind of questions about his game. And, you know, and very surprisingly for me, I think, and I'm sure Mike will probably agree, and maybe you as well, Russ, you wouldn't expect, really, I suppose, that Hutchinson would have overtaken him as first choice, not from what we saw at the start of the season. But that's what's happened, and you've got to give full credit to Sean Hutchinson, because he had a terrible start to his Fulham career, you know, with a bad game at Ipswich and the sending off as well at home. And you know, and under Felix, he probably would have been bombed out. We'd never seen him again. But thankfully, he got another chance. And him and Bodaroff have really established quite a nice partnership, I think, of late. And it's totally justifiable that Byrne is on the sidelines, because some of his performances weren't as solid as that. However, you know, he's not an old player. You know, he's 22, 23, whatever. And for his contract not to be extended and the risk of losing him in the summer may have been, you know, a step too far the other way. So I think this is good that, you know, we're keeping him for another year and hopefully he can develop. And I'm sure if he can develop, the contract will get extended again. I'm sure there must be an option in there anyway. You know, and what we've seen is it's good that, you know, someone like Sean Hutchinson has come in and done well, and it does. And as Dan Byrne says, they fight, you know, for competition. And it's nice because I spoke to Dan Byrne actually last week, and, you know, he's really loving it, even though he's not in the team. He's, you know, he gets on really, really well with Sean Hutchinson, because they're both from the northeast. And so there doesn't be no bitterness at all, even though he's lost his place at the moment. And that's good. It gives a good positive spirit, because we all need competition in for our places, because if you just walked into the team, I don't think you'd ever fight as hard. So, you know, people have got to fight for that shirt, haven't they? And yes. Dan Byrne knows he has to fight for that shirt, whereas perhaps he literally came back and he walked into the team. So it's good for him, and it's good positive attitude for a young player. And let's hope that he can develop and earn himself another extension next year.
Absolutely, David. You know, again, I see this as a good thing for the player and for the club. So I'm happy that Dan Byrne will be around for another year, and hopefully we'll see more development from him. But I, you know, again, I also think it's a good thing that we have seen the development of Sean Hutchinson. That's been a revelation this year, and knocked him down a peg, but that's okay. You know, hopefully he will take that as motivation the rest of the season and next year as well, you know, for Dan Byrne to work on his game, and then maybe he'll get his chance once again. All right, sorry, Mike, I'm going over to you. I want to ask you about the loan extension for Matt Smith at Bristol City, which we'll see in there until March 1st. What are your thoughts on this situation that has been going on for a little bit? You know, there are some supporters that would like to have him back. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, I mean, if Kit doesn't think he's going to need him over the next month, then, you know, why not just loan him out? I mean, there is a mixture, you know, there are fans who want him back desperately because he scored 5 goals in a cup competition against a team which honestly didn't look very good. I suppose it depends. I don't think Kit wants a big, tall striker like that. I mean, I'm someone who's not a fan of that type of player, you know, the 6-foot-6 striker. I think it's an easy option for defenders to just look up, see a big player and hit the ball to him. And I mean, if you're trying to play football, it's not something I like to see. So I've got nothing against him. I don't think he's the answer that everyone thinks he is, or even an option. I'd rather stick with Woodrow and Dembele and McCormick and Hugo at the moment as our four strikers, if you like. I mean, if he comes back, he'd be the fifth, sixth one. You know, there's Taggart as well, who probably ain't going to see this year. He's going to go on loan, probably. But, yeah, I'm happy for him to, you know, have another month there. It's disappointing for him. He's going to miss out on the Wembley final. But his situation, maybe, you know, Hutchinson, he started poorly, got sent off. had a chance, got back in. Matt Smith, you know, got sent off on his debut, apart from a few minutes at the Rotherham game. I don't think we've seen him again. And so there must be, you know, people talk about, oh, you know, they're not doing it on the training ground, that's why they're not getting picked. Maybe Smith was like that, and that's why Kip sent him out. Who know, you know, no one really knows. But we'll see when he comes back. He might get a few games for the end of the season, but I wouldn't bank my house on it, I have to say.
Okay. No, good stuff, Mike. And I could just tell by talking to you, he's definitely not your cup of tea, which is fine. You know, again, you don't have to like all different kinds of strikers. If you don't like a big, tall striker, that's fine. You know, again, I don't blame you there, my friend. If you don't think we need him, that's fine. I'm happy with your commentary there. All right, David, just to finish off Cottage Talk quick shots, I'll just ask you quickly about this subject. Fulham announced as well the loan extension for Stephen Athawari with Yeovil Town until the end of the season. And Josh Pasley is going to Portsmouth on a one-month youth loan deal. What are your thoughts on these situations for these young Fulham defenders?
Well, again, just, you know, get them playing, get them match experience, let them experience playing at a different place with different players. Hopefully it will just enhance their, you know, their experience and make them more rounded players. I mean, for all of them, I guess it's a matter of it's a juggling act, isn't it, that the club have to weigh up who they want to keep and who they don't. And for some, it will be probably borderline whether they do stay in it in the long run, because obviously we have competition for places. And it depends on the senior players, of course. But at the moment, you know, Josh Pasley is now sort of, you know, third or fourth choice from at right back. Athawari, you know, likewise, isn't near getting in. So get them playing, get them experience, see how they develop, and take a view on their future sort of at a later stage.
Now, listen, I think this is a good thing for both players. Give them some experience, and I always like loan deals for younger players, and we'll see if they can gain some experience from that. Very good stuff there, David. All right, let's move on. Let's now look back at the Sunderland match from last Saturday. And Mike, I'm going to start with you again. I'm going to go through the steps here. You're going to share me your thoughts on the match. Then we'll talk about the starting 11, your overall key moment of the match, and also your man of the match. But let's start with just your overall thoughts about what you watched at the Stadium of Light last Saturday.
Well, it was a very good cup tie, you know, and there didn't look to be much difference between the Premier League team and the Championship team that we are now. And it was a very young team that we put out. So I think either team could have won. I thought we edged it. And, you know, against 10 men, we should have done a bit better. There were a couple of changes with the subs that didn't work immediately, and that allowed Sunderland to have a good 10-minute spell where it looked like they were going to get a score. But overall, you know, probably a fair result, given the actual chances and saves that Bettinelli made. But we acquitted ourselves really well. And for me, what it did is it says, you know, we've got a core group of players who can compete at that level, which is the sort of, you know, lower half of the Premier League. And we shouldn't be frightened of playing, you know, those usual suspects who are in that, you know, bottom half of the league. So, yeah, promotion for next year and then pushing on. These guys will be, you know, 18 months older and with more experience. So that was the main thing for me, how the young players coped in that environment. And, yeah, overall, a good cup game.
Okay, so it sounds like to you it was a combination of big picture, encouraged by the big picture. You could see, you know, again, we're not that far off on that level. You know, again, like you said, if you're talking about promotion, say next year, you know, for you, it's not, you know, again, it's not out of the realm that this young group of players can play on that level. That was number one. And number two, you just like the experience of the cup tie. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I mean, it was you know, not the pressure of a league game, and there was a good, you know, it was about 700 or 800 Fulham fans up there. It was a good atmosphere. It was a long day for me traveling up to it, but. But yeah, it was just good to see, you know, the players playing against technically Premier League, you know, a team. And, you know, Fofana did well. LVC, you know, probably played within himself. the standout for me, we're used to betting early now. You know, he's a good goalkeeper. He makes the saves. But it was Tunnicliffe. And Tunnicliffe playing that Parker role, you know, no one's quite sure what kind of player Tunnicliffe is because we haven't really seen him. And, you know, last week I thought, well, you know, here we are. We've got someone who can step into Parker's position against this level of opposition. And maybe that's what, you know, maybe we don't need to go out and get that central defensive midfielder I think we need, because maybe we already have that player here. And hopefully they can share the load with Parker.
It's funny you say that, Mike, because I'm going to ask you that question in the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. We're going to talk about Ryan Tunnicliffe. I want to get your thoughts in more detail when we get there, because I find the whole situation with him very interesting, because we've been talking about defensive central midfielder for a while. So, you know, again, we'll definitely get there in a little bit. But, David, back to you. I just want to get your overall thoughts. You were there as well. Do you concur with Mike about what his takes were, or is there something else that you got out of it?
You know, we sat there at half time and swapped notes to make sure that we agreed. No, seriously, you know, I think it's, you know, I said to you after the game, my standout, first of all, was Tunnicliffe, and I was impressed with his contribution to the match, because that was our big question on Friday night, if you remember, in the preview show. We talked about the lineup, and I said, obviously, I would expect Parker to be in there for his experience, and we had the question about LVC you know, coming back or whatever, and I said, obviously, if Parker doesn't play LVC, we'll have to pay. And I think the way that the diamond worked there, that was probably worked best for Tunnicliffe, actually, because he had the right players around him. He had, you know, the strength and the pace and Fofana and LVC just ahead of him and to the side of him, and he just sat there controlling, you know, that space. But, you know, in overall, the match for a 0-0, I think it was quite exciting for a 0-0. Some 0-0s are very dour, but it was quite some end-to-end stuff at times. Both sides could have won it. I mean, Bettinelli certainly was the busy goalkeeper and made more saves, but I think had we had maybe slightly better quality in the final third, we could have created some more chances. We got behind them quite a few times, which is what we've been failing to do since LVC was out of the team, and he was back, and we managed to get behind them. Both he and Kakanicic has got behind them, and with better sort of square balls pulled back, perhaps we could have got a few more shots in. But it was, you know, overall for me, it was a very positive experience. We acquitted ourselves very well. I thought first half we controlled the game completely. We were never really under any pressure at all. We played it at our pace. It was Sunderland who were trying to get the ball back off us, and the crowd were getting really quite restless. Second half, they came out a bit better, and there was a bit of a strange substitution, I'm afraid, from Kip once again, and as Mike alluded to. And that kind of, you know, with 10 men, really we should have at that point been bossing it, but we let them back into the game. They had those couple of chances, I think, from Defoe, but Bettinelli did well enough. And at the end, I think you would feel coming away from it, maybe we missed the chance to nick it there and then. No one really wants a replay, but if we can acquit ourselves in the same way on Tuesday, there's no reason why we can't get something out of it. Saying that, you know, they did have a couple of key players missing. Adam Johnson is always quite dangerous. And Lee Catamol, for all his sort of sins, is quite highly rated as well up there. So if those guys are back, it may be a bit tougher for us.
No, listen, I hear you on that. You know, again, they weren't at full strength, but neither were Fulham. Fulham were missing a few players as well, David, as you know. But I still think, again, even there, you know, even though it's a goalless draw, I think you could take positives out of it. I think both of you have. You know, again, I think we have a good chance of beating them in the replay. I do. You know, and again, I think it was a positive step. Win, lose, a draw, and this is a draw. So I see where you're going on that, David. All right, right back to you. Let's talk about the starting 11. Share with me your thoughts there, David.
Well, the back five, I mean, has almost been picking itself, and so, you know, that was spot on. Midfield, again, likewise, I said it would be three out of those four, and obviously it was the three that were available. The one that surprised me, though, was Ruiz, because we saw Kakanicic come in and do really well, and I thought that, on one hand, we thought Ruiz is in somewhere, some strange part of the world, signing for Boca Juniors or AC Milan or wherever he was, and there up he popped suddenly in Sunderland. But And with his record away from home, I did think Kakanic would be a better choice to move the ball around a bit quicker and stuff and run at them. And up front, of course, that was the surprise, because there'd been all this talk about seeing how Ross McCormack would acquit himself against Premier League opposition, and suddenly him and Hugo on the bench. So I wasn't unhappy with the lineup particularly, because the formation was there that you know, I thought would be there, and the midfield three were there, and I was very, very pleased to see that LVC was back. But I suppose I was a bit disappointed not to see McCormack after his recent great form. And obviously Ruiz, you know, let's not go there too much, but I thought Kaká would have been a better choice.
Okay. Over to you, Mike.
I mean, I was probably disappointed that Byrne never started. I mean, he's been on the bench for a while now and not had a game. So I thought it was a good chance to play him, but it makes sense keeping that back five together, which then goes back to Tomori, you know, does he bring in the guy on loan? But, the team sort of made sense. It rested important players, and McCormack, if you believe what you read this week, is carrying an Achilles injury, so there's a chance to rest him. I was okay with the team, and like I say, they acquitted themselves very well, and it was just the substitutions with probably a couple of the wrong players going off. But it was good to see LVC back, although we were, I think, all 700 odd of us all thought, oh God, is he, you know, maybe he should start on the bench. But he did okay and played within himself, and it was, as David says, it was good to see him. He gives us that running and that ability to get behind the defences, and it was interesting watching Kaká come on as well in place of Ruiz, and the difference between them, because we were so high up, you get a different sort of look on the game, and Ruiz is very much stand still, give the ball, pass it around, whereas Kaká gave you that bit more sort of, you know, forward momentum. So, and Dembele got an hour's run out, which he needed as well, and I thought he did okay. But it made sense, the starting lineup.
Okay, very interesting. And again, the match ended in a goalless draw, Mike. But again, there are different points of this match that I would say would be the key moment of the match. We could talk about the substitutions that you were just mentioning. We could talk about the second yellow by Jack Rodwell. We could talk about the first yellow, because again, I've seen it a few times. I think that you could make the argument that it should have been red. But I'm curious, overall in the match, where do you think, you know, again, it ends up in a draw, but for you, what was the key moment? I'm going to tell you what the key moment for me was. It was the fact that they were again up a man, and it didn't feel like they were up a man. So I'm just curious your thoughts on where you thought the key moment of this match was.
It was the sending off. I mean, that was the key moment. You could argue it was Hugo hitting the post. It was a decent shot from him from about 20 odd yards out. But it was the sending off. It gave us, you know, the sort of feeling, oh yeah, we're going to win this, and it also got their crowd down a little bit. But then we made the substitutions, and for 10 minutes we just couldn't get going, and we allowed them to come on to us, and I think they had a number of corners. Certainly Bettinelli made a couple of decent saves in that time, so you're probably right. We that initially, straight after the sending off, we didn't make the most of it. The last 10 minutes we were a lot better, and we could have won it in those time, you know, that was with Hugo on and McCormack and Kaká. So you had the main 11, if you like, on the pitch at that time. So it was disappointing not to beat 10 men, but you know, they got decent players, and they were at home, and their crowd, it was the only time their crowd really got motivated to sort of, you know, spur them on. And so it was backs to the wall, but again, we showed our defensive abilities, you know.
Yep.
We dug in, and after that initial burst, you know, it didn't look as if they were going to score, and it looked like there was only going to be one winner. But it was the sending off, really.
Okay, very good. David, over to you. And I could also throw in two really great saves by Marcus Bettinelli, which, you know, again, it's almost getting to the point where we're taking it for granted. But Jermaine Defoe always scares me, David, whenever he plays against Fulham. And He scared me again in this match, but Marcus Bettinelli stepped up. Would it be one of those two saves? Would it be the second yellow, which had Jack Rowell going off, or would it be actually Hugo hitting the post? What's the key moment of the match for you?
Well, I don't like to talk about things in a negative way, believe it or not, because I know you think so, but for me, it is a bit of a negative. The one that stood out for me was that when they went to 10 men, Kit had the chance, I think, to win it. And for me, he blew it by his substitution. Fofana was very, very strong. He was running at them, and they were scared. And, I mean, you saw there was, I think, on one of the highlights, well, you just saw the whole match, but even on the highlights, he had a run. He did really well. And I thought at that point, we're going to really strangle the game, you know. And I was saying, maybe it's time to get Ruiz off, get Kakalicic on instead. Let's run at them a bit more now. But what did he do? He took Fofana off and put Kakalicic on. And straight away, where we were bossing them in midfield because we had that extra man, we lost our strength. We had Ruiz and Kakalicic, neither who are strong players. And they managed to kind of get back because they carried on playing. They played like a 3-5-2, basically. So they just went to playing a 3-4-2. And they managed to acquit themselves still because it ended up with a strange scenario where Kaká and Ruiz were almost both playing as cam in the same part of the pitch. And Ruiz was kind of standing there and feeding the ball to Kaká. But it was an unnecessary substitution. It was, you know, keep Ruiz on if you must, but don't take Fofana off. Fofana was doing really, really well. And unless there was a knock that we didn't know about, that we really gave away a lot of our strength because we were looking strong in midfield anyway. And that really was, for me, was a bad move. And I think we could have gone on and taken the game on that one. But that was a disappointment because, as you say, when the other team goes down to 10 men, straight away it gives you a bit of a lift. But you would have thought from, you know, the initial spell, as Mike said, after that time, you'd have thought it was us with 10 men and then with 11. Okay, we did compose ourselves a little bit better because I think they were probably trying to go for the win. It left us more space. Ruiz actually did have a good run forward where he fed the ball in nicely to LVC. And his pullback didn't quite find the Fulham man, but that could have been a winner. And, of course, then we had the Hugo one as well. But we never really looked like losing it, you know. And Bettinelli did do well with his saves, you're right. And, you know, Defoe, you have to worry about him because he has a good record against us. But for me, the standout was most certainly Kit's substitution. I think that he got it wrong on that one.
Okay, and that's what I wanted to get your opinion on that. So for you, it was the substitution, you know, and also obviously that led to the opportunity or not the opportunity taken advantage of to get that goal. And it didn't happen, and now we have a replay. So I see where both of you are going on this. And also, you know, again, for me, when you go up a man, I just, call me crazy, I do expect at that point you should be scoring a goal, but it did just seem like we, for some reason, were on the back foot, and I couldn't understand it until I watched it. And I'm like, okay, you know, I can see what's going on there. And listen, Sunderland have our Premier League side, and they show it, you know, being down a man. So I get all that. All right, guys, question for you. David's going to be dialing back in. Mike, would you like to rate all the players? Just give me numbers on all the players all together and not really much commentary, or would you rather just go to full man of the match? You know, because, again, I just think it would take too much time for us to really rate all the players. I was thinking about it, but we have so much other stuff I want to talk about. I want to get your thoughts before we move on.
Oh, no, I'm just happy to do man of the match. It was between Tunnicliffe and Bettinelli, and it was Tunnicliffe for me, despite Bettinelli making a few saves. I just thought Tunnicliffe stepped up to the role. You know, Ruiz was the senior player in that midfield four, but it was Tunnicliffe who was, you know, dictating where the ball was going, and played really well, very disciplined, kept that position. And he won me over on that game. I was very impressed. It goes back to what I've been saying for a long time, Russ. It's, you've got to give players a run, you know, five, six games, starting games, to let them settle into the team and learn the way that team plays. And that's exactly what Tunnicliffe has done. He's come back, did okay at Cardiff, had a bit of a dodgy home game the other week, and then he's slowly settled in now, and I can't see him how you could drop him tomorrow, to be honest. So it's a question when we get to picking the teams for tomorrow, out of those midfielders, who's going to get in? Because it's nice to have these problems. And it goes back to the silly mistake of letting Tunnicliffe and Kaká go on loan, where we reduced our squad by two decent players.
Absolutely.
And these two players coming back in January, people are moaning about no signings, but these two are like two new signings for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very good point, Mike. And I'm glad that you brought up the fact of letting young players, give them a chance to play, and that's going to lead me, before I go to David's man of the match, David already mentioned Seiko Fofana. Again, a young player that, again, starting to improve a little bit each and every match. What are your thoughts about his performance? Do you agree with David that he played fairly well in this match?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were all surprised. Fofana has his detractors, but he played really well last week, and he is one of those players, I've been saying it as well on the show, he gets the ball, and once he starts going forward, the crowd get excited, and because we were so high up, you could see him, how direct he is. He gets the ball, and he's looking to go forward, and he played just on the left-hand side of Tunnicliffe, and that looks to me his best role, just on the left, in the diamond. Don't stick him out on the wing somewhere. But again, you know, tomorrow's going to be a test to see whether he's picked. You know, there's lots of talk that he has to play, and I can't see how he can tomorrow, to be honest, even though he did play well last week. If you're going to stick with, you know, the first team players, if you like. But yeah, he had a good performance last week. Very good.
Okay, and you know, again, I thought of that as well when I was watching the replay. That's why I wanted to ask you, and David had already mentioned Fofana, so I wanted to make sure we got a little bit in on him. David, who was your man of the match?
Well, the one that struck me was Tunnicliffe as well, although obviously Bettinelli, with some of the saves he made, kept us in it, of course. I gave them both 8 out of 10, but I would give Tunnicliffe the man of the match on that one. And I gave everyone else reasonable scores for Fofana 7.5, LVC 7, Bodroff and Hutchinson 7, Grimmer 7 as well. There you go, Mike, 7 for Grimmer. Woodrow 6.5, Stafford 6, Dembele 6, and of course Ruiz 5.5. And you know, the strange thing about Ruiz was that his most telling contributions for me actually was he did a couple of really good defensive headers away, and he actually even got stuck in for a couple of tackles because, unlike Ruiz, I think after we took Fofana off, he really needed to roll his sleeves up because we were a bit weak in there. So, but that's not what Ruiz should be in the team for. He should be there to create, but he wasn't really, as Mike said, you know, he just stands there and grabs the ball around, where I think Kakanic would have been a better choice on that day. But definitely, for me, Tunnicliffe, you know, he looked very, very mature in that role, extremely mature. And, you know, as we said before, he had a game, you know, the game where he played centre midfield previously at the Cottage, he didn't look very good. Then they switched to the diamond and he looked a bit better. Then he had a good game after that against, I think, Forest, wasn't it? He started really well against Forest. But he was such a mature head. He just sat there, he mopped up. He did everything that Parker does, literally. I mean, not yep. quite the same, but in a similar way. He did the odd burst forward. He did some good passing. And it was out of the players I've seen at the club so far that we have, it was probably the most direct replacement for Scott Parker if Parker's not available.
Right.
So perhaps long term, this is the way forward. And, yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting what happens tomorrow up at Blackburn. So please go to Mike first when we pick the team, because I'm struggling at the moment.
Okay, well, David, listen, we're not there yet because we have to now go into the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. And it's so funny because we are talking so much about Ryan Tunnicliffe. I actually put that up on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. This is the question I asked, and I'll ask the two of you since we're already talking about him. Here is a question. Ryan Tunnicliffe has returned from his loan, and his last match featured in central midfield. Could he become a long-term solution in central midfield for Fulham? I only have two comments. I'll just read them real quickly. Lee Randall says, yes. I thought he did the Parker role against Sunderland very well. He's young, so why not? Matthew Camp wrote, I think he's a good replacement for Parker. However, would we want him to start if we go to the Premier League in the next couple of seasons? All right. David, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts about my question and those comments from the two Fulham supporters about Ryan Tunnicliffe?
Well, I'm just glad that today is the Ryan Tunnicliffe show rather than the Brian Ruiz show for a change. It makes a nice change, doesn't it?
Exactly.
But the second comment there, okay, perhaps a bit negative, but it's an interesting one because this is one game he's had. You know, we've seen one game in that position, and he's done really well. So, if you're a scientist and you've seen this thing, you can extrapolate along that and think, yeah, this is what's going to happen. But we don't really know. He needs to do this week in, week out. Scott Parker does do it week in, week out. Even at his age, Scott Parker, he is pretty reliable and dependable there. If Tunnicliffe can emulate that, then yes, I'm quite confident he could be what we're looking for. And he's come from a Premier League club, of course, and he wasn't a regular at Manchester United, but he was there and thereabouts. He's on the periphery of quite a strong team. So there's nothing to say that he couldn't do well in the Premier League. We never saw him in that position when he played for Fulham. He ended up playing, in all the games in the Premier League for Fulham, or the few he played, kind of a right back or right midfield sort of role, which probably wasn't his best position. So I don't think we can make too many judgments. We can only say that if he carries on like that, then yes, he could be the answer there. But, I was impressed, as I say. I thought he looked extremely mature, what he did, the protection he offered the back four, but also not just that, the way he used the ball as well. He used the ball very sensibly and helped get moves going, and a couple of times went forward himself. And, it was a fairly complete performance for me. He had the passing and the tackling and everything else. So, yeah, a very positive start, but we need to see a run like that, I suppose, before we make bigger judgments.
Listen, I asked the question, and I thought about it when I put it out there. I'm like, oh, David's going to hammer me on this because I need to give him more time, and you're probably right there, David. Mike, over to you. Do you agree with David's assessment that obviously we need to give him more game time to see if he could be that overall solution? But I found those comments from the two Fulham supporters interesting. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean we have gone a little bit over the top probably on his performance last week, and we do need to see him do it again. But what you do is when you start watching these players, it's now, it's 5 games since he came back, I think, and a couple of games last year. And I look at a player and I don't see the dynamic player going forward like LVC. I don't think he has a long passing range like Heidman. But what he does have is, that little pass, keeping the ball moving, which he did against Forest very early on. And then the other day, he just sat in front of that back four. He reminded me very much of Hoogland when he's played there. Hoogland's very limited in going forward in that role. He just sort of sits. And that's what I'm looking for, is a defensive midfielder who protects that back four and keeps the ball moving. And he showed that, and as I said earlier, Ruiz was the oldest player in that midfield four, but it was Tunnicliffe who was the leader and dictating. And really, for all of Ruiz's skill and that, he should be the one who's dictating the game. It wasn't. It was Tunnicliffe moving the ball around, giving it to Fofana, giving it to LVC or to Ruiz. So yeah, one game we can get carried away. What I would say about the person who answered one of the questions was, can he do it against Premier League teams? Well, he did last week.
Very good comment there. Oof, very good comment there, Mike. I like that. Very feisty. I like that. Yes, he did it against Premier League team. He did. So who's to say he couldn't do it against other Premier League clubs? Very good take there, Mike. I like that. And I think he can, I know I'm jumping the gun, and I got excited too. When I watched, I was like, "Oh, could he be, the long-term solution?" So I ran with it. I probably shouldn't have put it up there, but I did. So, but at least we could, make it the Ryan Tunnicliffe show today. All right, let's move on. Now, this question has gotten a ton of responses. I knew it would. So I'm going to start with you guys because I want to hear what your response is before I share all of the comments from the Fulham supporters. I was just thinking about this because someone tweeted to me, guys, they basically wanted to give me a little Fulham test, and they wanted me to name like the managers in between the blanks, and one was where Kevin Keegan was, and one was Wary Sanchez, and I knew both of the answers, and it says, don't cheat, Russ, and I didn't cheat, I knew the answers, but then it got me to think, let's talk about our favorite the best Fulham manager that we know. So again, you guys have much more experience in this than I do, obviously, coming from 2007. But I thought I would put it on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, and I got to tell you, it took off because the answers are all over the place, and they're fascinating. But, David, I'm going to start with you. Let's start right here. Here's the Cutters Talk Facebook question. Who has been the best full manager since you've been a supporter? That goes back a long ways, my friend. Who's number one?
No need to rub it in. Well, I'm going to give you a short list to start off with. First manager we had was Alex Stock when I was first started. And of course,
okay.
He was the one that took us to the Cup final in 75.
People have mentioned him, by the way. Go on.
Yeah, he was obviously a memorable one. And then, you know, after that, I guess Malcolm McDonald, for what he did in a short time, he got us really playing and got us onto the point of top-flight football. Then you have to move forward, I don't know, and there's been a few. I mean, Ray Harford was probably very underrated, actually, because he's come across as a bit of a dour man, but I think he's actually a good tactician, but I don't think he'd stand out for many Fulham ones. And then, really, we had a succession of a bit of a duds, really, and it goes back to Mickey Adams, who got us back out of the bottom flight. Obviously, Kevin Keegan, for what he did. John Tigana for how he revolutionised us to got us to the Premier League. And of course, really after that, I guess, I mean, Coleman, I think people would like Coleman, but I think Coleman's successes were a lot on the back of the successful squad that Tigana built. And I think it went a bit sour for Coleman in the end, and he was a bit of a Martin Yolder. He stayed a bit long, perhaps. And then, of course, dear old Uncle Roy, of course, you know, and what the wonders he did. So for me, I think out of all of them, it would be a toss-up between Tigana and Roy, because Tigana, you know, I mean, you've seen it now, the exciting football, how he revolutionised us. I mean, we were a good team, we had money behind us, but he took us to another level. It was unbelievable when he took over, you know. And then Roy, you know, of course, he came in at a difficult time and he saved us and he built something special, but, you know, and he got us to a European final, which was, you know, actually unbelievable. In terms of the actual football being played, I guess Tigana would just shade it because, you know, Roy's football was tend to be fairly conservative and it worked brilliantly for Europe and it did okay for the Premier League. But I think Tigana was just, it was another thing. It was just, you know, that was the one that really blew me away. Roy didn't blow me away. It was a fun experience and we loved him as manager. But for me, I'm going to go for Tigana.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Mike, over to you.
Well, I won't rattle through them all because I make it, I've just done a quick count up and I make it 20 managers in 37 years since I've been going, and that started with Bobby Campbell. So there's so many actually I've liked. I mean, McDonald was great and we had a great promotion season there. I always liked Ray Lewington, even though you know we didn't do much with him. I always thought he was a decent, nice bloke. Mickey Adams' promotion season was great. And I'm sure Dave would agree that was that's a unique season there, really.
Yep.
Keegan promotion was good. Tegan R. Coleman, you know, I mean, up to Roy. But I'd have to agree with Dave, really. I mean, it's between Tegan R. and Roy Hodgson. Roy Hodgson for, you know, highest position in the Premier League and getting us to the final. But I have to say, and over all those years, the one manager who changed the coach the team to play a different way and produce some of the best football I've ever seen is Tigana. You know, the season before we had Bracewell, which was negative football, keep a clean sheet first of all, and then you know, he eventually got the sack, and then Tigana came in, and I remember my old man watching us play a game at Brentford pre-season. He rang me up afterwards and just said, "You're not going to believe the football they're playing." And so it began, and that season will always stand out for me. And the way he turned players like Brevitt, who was a jobbing left back, into somebody who looks like, you know, a top-notch footballer. And it was a great season. One, I think I missed two games home and away all season. So yeah, Tigana for me over all that time. Roy very close, but just for the best football, it was Tigana.
Okay, very good. Very good by the both of you. I got to tell you, I don't think I can go through all these comments. There's so many of them, but I'm just going to try to go through several of them because people have asked me. They want to hear their thoughts on college talk, so I'll try to go through as many as I can, guys. Let's start here with Dave Phillips. Roy, for saving us in the Europa Cup. Ron and Tigana for bringing the new style play and some great players, creating some superb memories. Kind of what you guys have been talking about. Chris Lewis, I think Roy, for the way he built an effective side, but would argue that the case for Mark Hughes introduced a far more attack-minded dynamic in the side, and I think he was leaving I think his leaving was a long-term catalyst for our relegation. Very interesting. My first manager was Bracewell, though, mind. Let's see. Is that probably since 1970? It's surely got to be Roy. Could never imagine Fulham in Europe, let alone the amazing run to the final. Colin Bugler says, Malcolm McDonald, not sure if he was the best, but was my favorite. Tagana should get mentioned, and Hodson. So everyone's kind of, you know, going a different path, but kind of going around the same way. William Byrne wrote, Roy, special mention for the great Mickey Adams, though Adams was my favorite, Hodson was the best. Steve Snell wrote, got to be Roy for the way he turned the club around. Maybe Kit will be spoken about with such reverence one day, too. He certainly is doing a good job so far. George Johnston says, Roy, Chris Baugh, I've been a supporter since 1990. I don't know about the best player, but best signing to be, can't even read the guy's name, Mohamed Al-Fayed has just taken over. I saw Paul for the first time on a Friday night against Gilliam at the cottage. Okay, so I'm not getting that one considering I talked about a manager. Let's see. Roger Lewis is Alex Dock, who took us to our only FA Cup final, followed very closely by Roy. Guy Brew has to be Roy Hodson, Roger Warren Hodson, and Tagana. James Hunt, Tagana. That promotion season, the football we played was unbelievable. Made the championship look easy. Finding out how good we were that year. Let's see. Stephen McGovern only watched the 2001 DVD recently, and they were amazing. That strike force was unbelievable, and Sean Davis had such a great breakout year. That's really to go on the Tagana comment there. George Kenton, Roy. Sean Casey, Roy or Tagana? A lot of the same here. James Thomas, in my brief time. Let's see. Christopher Jeremiah Simons. He's brought some semblance of hope back to the club. Okay, let's see. Paul Steele saw my first game in 1972, so it's a tough choice. Very subjective question, though. John Tagana produced quite simply the best ever side when we won promotion to the Premier League, but he had millions to spend. Of course, Roy Hodgson worked a miracle saving us. James Costin said Roy, John James Tagana, Jokini Tagana, Wada Tagana. So let's see what else we got here. Janice Adams has got to be Roy. LRHC London, Roy without a doubt. Steve Owens says it's got to be Mickey Adams. See, we're going all over the place, guys. Let's see. Stephen O'Keefe, Roy Hodgson, Steve McGovern, Roy Hodgson, Graham Gurr, Tagana. Let's see. And this is favorite Mickey Adams. Christian Busani, Roy Hodgson without a doubt. Paul Gravestock, Roy. Let's see. Ingrid Agron, Roy Hodgson. Lucy Alice Ward has to be Roy. He showed a lot of passion for us and always stayed positive if we didn't win, getting us to the Europa League final. Sad to see him leave, but proud. He's our English manager now, and, of course, he is. Let's see. John Light, Tagana for style, Hodgson for belief, and Adams for getting the best with nothing. Tom and Raman has to be Roy. Okay, guys, I could keep going and going and going. We got so many. Heather Frederick Smith says Hodgson, but we really got to move on because, I could keep going on. Just mention real quickly, Brian Hurley also said Alex Dock, and I'm sorry if I didn't read all of the comments. There were so many of them. Mike, what are your thoughts about what everyone shared about their best Fulham manager?
Yeah, well, it just shows that over time, you know, we've had some good managers who have, given us really good seasons that we remember. I always think it's a case of you remember, you know, your first real season where you had success. So it might be an age thing, I don't know. But, it's a good mixture. So Hodgson's the easy answer, I think. But there's other things to think about. You know, the Adams family, when we got promoted there. But really, I thought, you know, listening to it, I think a lot of them agreed with myself, actually, and it was the football.
They actually agree with both of you because you both are kind of on the same wavelength. That's what I found interesting. Yeah. David, what are your thoughts about what I just shared from the Fulham supporters?
I do the jokes normally, Mike. I would say they agree with me, not you, wasn't it? But Yeah, no, you're right with what you say, Mike, that, I mean, Russ, you're the perfect example of this, actually. You started in 2007, so if you hadn't been watching the history, you'd say Roy Hodgson, wouldn't you, of course, because he was the first and really the only success story, I guess, since then. But, of course, you go back and say, you know why we've picked Ighana now. But I think everyone has their own favourite times. You know, I remember the cup final run of 1975, that was fantastic. I remember going to Hillsborough for the semi-final as a little boy, and, you know, what an experience that was as well. But, of course, you know, Ighana also got us to a semi-final against the other team as well, which was we unlucky not to get through in that one. So, yeah, it's going to be subjective, isn't it? Everyone's going to have their own reasons, but the trend, the underlying trend there is effectively, you know, it's Roy for what he's done in recent times, or Ighana, the football he's got, and obviously honourable mentions for others like Alex Stock and Mickey Adams. You know, that I don't know if such a thing exists, a DVD of that season, but we had no money. We had to, like, you know, I don't know, they used to take lemonade bottles back for 1p to the newsagents and to buy players, literally. We were that skint that season. We really were that skint. And somehow Mickey Adams got a team out of nothing, playing really, really well. I remember how excited we were when we signed Richard Carpenter from Gillingham for about, I don't know, 20,000, 40,000, wasn't it, Mike? And what a great player he was, Richard Carpenter. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think it was 40 as well. And it's interesting when you look back, because we got promoted so quickly throughout the divisions. It was interesting seeing the quality. When you saw Carpenter play for us in the bottom division, you thought, oh, he can play higher, and he could play in the next division. But then you saw the next standard of player come in, and you realised, he's not as good, is he? And that continued all the way up to the Premier League, and we were quite lucky over those, what was it, 4 or 5 seasons.
That's right. And I think it was mentioned, Russ, one of the mentions was actually talking about, I think, Paul Pesci-Salido, actually. Was
I couldn't say that to save my life.
It's Paul Pesci-Salido, yeah?
Well, yes.
He comes from your side of the water as well. It should be easier for you than me saying Zverevic. But, yeah, no, that was the one that he was the kind of one of our first big signings of that new era. And, you know, that was such an exciting. I remember we signed him and who was we signed at the same time, Mike? It was from Luton, wasn't it? The guy from Luton, who was actually quite a good striker. And he never got a look in because of Pesci-Salido. Do you remember that one?
Wasn't Moody, was it? No, it wasn't. Was it Moody?
No, it was. Someone?
Tony Thorpe.
Yeah, Tony Thorpe, that's the one, yeah. And he was a great player.
Yeah,
he never got a look in, did he?
No. I always thought he'd be a good player for us, and it just didn't work out for him. And we were just spending money left, right and centre. And when you hear about what Keegan and Wilkins were doing, they literally got the football yearbook out and started looking for players because there was no scouting system or anything. And they were just throwing money left, right and centre. No financial fair play back then, that's for sure.
Wow. No,
that's right.
Very good stuff,
yeah.
Guys.
It brings up some good memories anyway, Russ.
No, seriously. That was part of the reason why I wanted to do that. I wanted to give you guys something, give the fans something to really talk about, and boy, did I get a lot of responses. So thank you, everyone, and I'm sorry if I was not able to read your response because there were so many of them, and that just is a testament to what people think about the best full manager. There's obviously everyone has their own thoughts on it, so that's what I got out of it so much was that to me was what was so great about doing this. All right, let's start our preview. A Blackburn, just a couple things before I go to you guys. The doubts that I've seen written have been Tom Kearney, Rudy Gusteed, and Grant Hanley, but the manager is hoping that maybe one will be available for this match. Again, this is the speculation that I've seen the last couple of days. Blackburn are currently 10th. What's interesting about them, they are 9-9-9, won 9, lost 9, and drawn 9. They've scored 36. They've given up 37. Goal differential minus 1. And they have 36 points compared to Fulham, who are in 14th, with actually more wins. 10 wins, but only 4 draws, 13 losses. 40 goals, 4 against 47, which is a minus 7 goal differential, and 34 points. So we are very close to them. Their leading scorer is Rudy Gusteed with 13 goals, and Jordan Rhodes has 9 goals. And I was just looking at some of their formations. 1 week they were playing 4-4-2. Another week they were playing 4-4-1-1. But they are a solid Premier League, I can't believe I just said that, championship side, Premier League. I got my head in the wrong place, guys. So, David, before we move on, you know what I did here, right? I contacted a friend of mine because, again, Derby County just played Blackburn. So I contacted our friend Andy Buckley-Taylor to just get some information for us on Blackburn, just some basic information. And this is what Andy shared with us. He's been on the show several times. I just asked him just to talk about the Derby County victory against Blackburn. He just said, Russ, we dominated possession. However, their goalkeeper and defense were very well organized. It wasn't until the second half that we breached their defense. Although they didn't play much of a part Tuesday night, he's now talking about the players to watch. Gusteed and Rhodes are players to watch on past experiences. Rhodes is a natural poacher. Then I asked him what he saw as their weaknesses. Their weaknesses seem to be putting together a string of passes and ball retention. Their strength is their defense and their goalkeeper, who's very commanding. Then I asked him, how can Fulham win this match? Once again, if Fulham like to play a nice passing game like Derby, I would say keep it like that. Midfield will need to be strong. Difficult one to call. Now victory for each side is achievable, but he's going for a score draw here. Okay, so that's just some basic information from our friend Andy Buckley-Taylor, who has a Derby County blog. All right, David, to you on Blackburn. You know, again, we played them once earlier in the season. What are your thoughts on them going into this match?
Well, things have changed a lot since we played them, but I thought we were, well, we weren't very good against them at home, but it was a game that I think we could have still got something out of. Problem for me is that, I don't know, over quite long history, we've been pretty poor going to the Northwest. We've had a bad run up there. Places like Burnley, I don't think we have ever seen us win up there. Obviously, Blackburn, we had the famous victory there in the Tigana season that we were talking about. But it's going to be a tough place to go. I think we will need to be well organised because, you know, the front two are a big threat. You know, we've talked a lot of times about, you know, Rhodes would have probably been a good signing for Fulham. I know Mike, I'm sure Mike thinks that. We're talking about other potential targets. So we're going to have to watch them like hawks. But I think, you know, we've got to worry about our own game. And if we can set ourselves up like we did against Sunderland, try and control the game, get the home crowd a bit sort of disheartened, then we have every chance that we can get something. But the danger will be they can always, in a flash, I think, nip up with a quick goal because, you know, they are, as I say, they are dangerous in that respect. Saying that, They're not massive goal scorers, obviously. If you look at their record, as you discussed, they haven't scored, you know, more than us, and they haven't won more than us. They've drawn more, and you know, one of the virtues of our success this year is the fact that, thankfully, we haven't drawn very much, because a draw, often, you know, you lose points on, don't you? Because if you won half your games and lost half your games, you'd be a lot better off than if you drew all your games, wouldn't you? So, because of the 3 points for the win. So that's held us in better stead than it might have done. But I think tomorrow, you know, I think if we could get a draw there, I think we'd probably be happy with that, going up there and getting a draw, because we've got, you know, a tough run of games. We've got another northwest trip coming up, I think, next week, isn't it, to Bolton. Is it next week? Probably is. Of course, we've got home matches against, you know, we've got some tough home matches as well, tougher home matches. We've got Ipswich at home and Derby at home coming up. We've got the Sunderland game replay. So I think, you know, we've got to go up there, be cautious, but, you know, try and nick it if we can, but go for the draw, because we know they have the danger to punish us if we lax.
Okay. No, good stuff there, David. And over to you, Mike. What are your thoughts about Blackburn so far this season? And again, I don't want to turn this into the Ryan Tunnicliffe show, but I'm going to bring him up again. He used to play for Blackburn, and you know, again, based on what I read after he came back to us, they were not happy to see him leave, meaning that he did a good job for him. How much of an influence do you think he could have on this game, on giving, say, even intel for Kiff for this game? Do you think he could actually be a bigger influence on this game just because he used to play for Blackburn?
Well, certainly it adds something to the game, and I know Kit mentioned in the on the website yesterday that he'd spoken to Ryan about it, and you know, we have scouts who have reported on him as well. But really, you know, Blackburn are the sort of that mid-table typical Championship team. You read out their record 9-9-9, and you know, their last few games has been a loss, a draw, a loss, a draw, a loss, a win, a loss. You know, I mean, it's they really are just an average Championship side, and you know, they have a lot of problems up there. Financially, they're in trouble, and it looks like, you know, there's a possibility that one or two of their players are going to go by Monday night, and you know, one of them will probably be Rhodes. We could have probably done with it happening today, but yeah, I'm a fan of Rhodes, and I would have been quite happy to sign him. He's not having he's probably having his worst season for a while now, but he's still got 9 goals. So we will have to be careful with him. But I'm fairly confident of tomorrow, and I think, you know, as long as we put out a strong side, and you know, there's no dramatic changes from the usual, you know, 14 or 15 players we've been using, then I'm confident of it. As usual, it's score first. I think, you know, with their crowd, you score first and they're going to lose part. And I could see us going up there and, you know, getting a very good result, to be honest. And there's also a lesson with Blackburn is if we look at them and note what they've done wrong and where we can improve. So that's on the sort of playing side and financially as well. You know, they're a team that come down a couple of seasons ago, and they're not anywhere near being a playoff team or top two. So they're a good standard for us. But most importantly, we're 2 points behind. We beat them, we go ahead of them, and it's a chance for us to, you know, overtake another team. I don't see playoffs as being a possibility, but, you know, certainly, you know, top 10 is possible, and, you know, we've got to grab these chances when they come along.
Absolutely. You know, make it interesting. I agree with you, Mike, because it would be very difficult to make the playoffs from where Fulham are right now, but why not win as much as you can and have as good of a season as you possibly can? It could start against Blackburn. And it's very interesting because I was looking at this and saying kind of similar to you, why not? Why can't they go there and win? It's an average side. You know, they should be favored because they're home, but why can't we go there and win? You know, that would be my approach. All right, David, over to you. You always like to look up some information on the referee. So what have you learned for us this week?
I'll just say if we do obviously make the playoffs, Mike will be eating almost as much humble pies as I will if Ruiz goes for big money, won't he, I guess? So that'll be a big turnaround, but I don't see it happening somehow. But anyway, the ref for tomorrow, we have another controversial one anyway.
Oh, fantastic.
And there is a Facebook page, and this, I'm quoting what it's called. I am not, I'm obviously not agreeing with this or not. I'm not trying to commit slander. But the Facebook page is, Dean Whitestone is the crappiest ref in the Football League.
Oh, nice.
So there's a Facebook page for you to follow in your spare time. Obviously, he's upset someone there. He's actually a policeman as well, so he's probably upset a few more people there. But
right.
Mixed reviews about him. We've never seen him at Fulham, so it's hard to say. You know, we haven't any previous experience of him as far as I know. But obviously, he's upset a few people along the way, which is probably commonplace if you're a policeman or a referee, I would imagine. But let's see what happens. Let's just, you know, watch out. I mean, some of the refs I've been very impressed with this year. There have been a few unknown ones I've thought have done really well. And in the same way, you know, we had Andre Mariner, who's a Premier League ref, and I'm not that impressed with him. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the unheard of refs are, you know, going to be rubbish. I mean, Mike went to Brighton, didn't you? I think we had the same ref at Brighton and at Birmingham away, and I thought he did really well, and I'd never heard of him before. So, anyway, a ref that could court controversy, but, you know, Dean Whitestone, let's see what happens tomorrow.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, Mike, over to you. You've kind of already said that you think Fulham need to score an early goal, but what else do they need to win this match? Is it really just about getting off to a fast start, or what else do they need to do? You know, what's interesting is that, you know, Andy shared that he thinks the key is going to be the midfield battle, that's where Fulham could really make some hay. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think David sort of touched on it, like, you know, the Sunderland game where we had Kaká and Ruiz in the same lineup, and that didn't work really. You need, if you're going to play that diamond, you need three solid midfielders. So I wouldn't want to see Ruiz and Kaká start tomorrow. So it's always tough up there. I mean, at least it's not a midweek game, and because I wouldn't give us any chance. But yeah, I mean, we just need to start solid, try and get an early goal. I mean, we've got the worst record in the Championship for letting in goals first. So it's something we need to improve for this second half of the season, because we're always playing catch-up, and you know, it's not doing us any favours at all. So solid start, try and get the early goal, but also, you know, win that midfield battle. I mean, the two strikers, they're good, you know. But I'm confident of our defence now. I mean, we've had some shaky games, but they've settled down. We've had a couple of good wins at home and the draw last week. So, like I say, I'm fairly confident that we're going to get something tomorrow, and they just need to be up for it, and I'm sure Tunnicliffe will be.
Very good take there, Mike. Over to you, David.
Yeah, I think we have to have the midfield set up right. That's very important. We do need to try and, I don't know about getting an early goal, but certainly not conceding an early goal is important. Of course, to win the match, we have to score, and we have to score more than they do. So obviously scoring is important, but also making sure that we keep Rhodes and Rudy Gestat quiet, if that's the case. So basically, you know, same as Mike said, really.
Okay, fantastic. All right, David, I like asking this question now. Which Fulham player has to have an exceptional match for them to get the victory? Would it be someone in the midfield?
Yeah, I think so. I think the midfield is the battle tomorrow, and perhaps tomorrow is the chance for LBC to step up a gear and show what he can do, because there is this talk that maybe McCormack is carrying a knock. And I think it's the midfield where tomorrow we're going to win it. And obviously it's going to be Permany 3 from 4 out of Park at LBC, for Fafana and Tunnicliffe, I think, plus one attacking midfielder. And I don't see Blackburn. I might be wrong. Listen, I'll come on Sunday. I am on Sunday, I think. Anyway, I'll come on Sunday. If Ruiz is the man who does it, who, you know, at Ewood Park, Ruiz comes out there and puts in a stormy performance, I will say I was wrong. But I don't see that being the sort of typical place, a cold northwestern town on a Saturday in the winter for Ruiz. So I don't see it being Ruiz. I see it one of the more, you know, midfielders. So I think someone like LBC, if LBC can have an exceptional game, we see how dangerous he can be, you know, with his runs and goals and assists. So I think for me, LBC.
LBC, okay. How about you, Mike? I'm curious your thoughts on this. Who really is going to be the key player in this match?
Okay, well, I'm going to, the other week I went for Parker, because, you know, pretty much for the same reasons, you know, keep it solid and win that midfield battle. But I'm actually going to go with Hugo. I think he needs to have an exceptional game tomorrow as well. I mean, it's clear that Simons wants him to be a starter, but a lot of the fans don't, and they feel Woodrow should be the player with McCormack. But if McCormack is carrying an injury, which they say, it's, you know, and Hugo, he had a couple of assists the other week at home. But, I think Hugo, he has to step up tomorrow. He has to get a goal. You know, we're talking about how to win the game. So, I think it's Hugo's time tomorrow to prove some of the doubters wrong.
Okay, fantastic. All right, Mike, David already said he wants you to go first. So share with me your starting 11 along with the formation you would use. It sounds like it would be a diamond.
Okay, so, so this is my team that I would go with.
This is your team, not Kit's team.
Yeah. So it would be the normal back five that we've been seeing recently, so I wouldn't make any changes there. And then in midfield, I would have Parker sitting. I'd have Tunnicliffe to his left and LVC to his right, and I'd have Kakanicic play the top of the diamond in that free role. And it'd be Hugo and McCormack up front. And it gives us lots of options on the bench to change things around, because, you know, there'd be Fafana, there'd be Ruiz, you have the two other strikers as well. That's pretty much, I would say, nine of the team picks itself at the moment. So it's just a case of where you're mucking around with that midfield, really.
That's interesting with you with Fofana, because, again, he's been starting every match, but I see where you're going on that. I kind of like it, though. I'd like to see him come off the bench every once in a while. I don't think that's a bad plan of attack there, Mike. All right, David, how about you? Do you agree with Mike's starting 11, or do you have something different in mind?
No, I agree with Mike. My only thing is, obviously, I would pick McCormack as first choice, but if he's not fit, of course, then that's not going to happen. If he's not fit, I guess we would see Corley maybe, or partnering Hugo, I would imagine anyway. Could obviously be, you know, anyone else, but I would imagine that would be the case. But the midfield, yes, I agree. I think on the basis that LVC obviously needs some game time now. Parker, you know, he should come back in, I think, if he's fit. Tunnicliffe deserves to stay back in on the basis that he knows Blackburn as well. He knows their game, so he would be an asset. So Fofana is the unlucky one who maybe should miss out. But he's played every game lately. We've got an important match again on Tuesday. If needs be, we can rotate for that one again. And, you know, Fofana was pretty good against Sunderland, so keep him fresh for that one maybe. Have him on the bench, obviously, anyway. And definitely Kakanicic out of the two. You know, I just don't see it happening for Ruiz in a place like this, you know. I mean, I think we're going to be, you know, backs to the wall at times perhaps, and we need to be breaking out quickly and moving the ball out quickly, and Ruiz doesn't really do that for me. So keep him on the bench as well. You know, we saw him come off the bench. You know, he did really well, actually. Well, relatively well. I wouldn't say really well. Relatively well. You'd have thought he'd done really well, the way people were talking. You know, you'd have thought Lionel Messi had come off the bench. But he came on, he did okay. For Ruiz, he did well. So keep him back, as a, you know, if we need be. But, yeah, I agree with Mike's lineup, bar obviously any injuries that we don't know about or McCormack not being fit. I'd be happy to keep McCormack on the bench if he's not quite fit, again, with a view to starting him on Tuesday.
Okay. And we have to take that in consideration, that there is a match on Tuesday in the FA Cup against Sunderland. All right, guys, let's go through predictions. I'll start with the predictions from the Fulham supporters that I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Let's start with Yanis Janaeus. Blackburn have injuries, but I predict a tough 1-1 draw. Tomita Rahman, Blackburn aren't easy fixture at all to predict, so he's going with 1-1 draw. Roger Lewis is going 2-1 to Fulham. Chris Baugh, I'm going for a tight game, but I think a few people back from injury, we can edge it 2-1. Wee Randall, 1-0, Tunnicliffe to score the winner. Yavor Alexiev, 2-1 to Fulham. We can do this. Those are the comments from the Fulham supporters. David, to you. Give me a prediction for this match, my friend.
I see something like a 2-2 myself, a 2-2, and neither scored by Ross McCormack, actually, right?
Oh.
Although he did get, I did suggest he might get all those points for the Patriots game. Did you see that quip I made the other day?
Yes, I did, David.
I thought we'd have to predict that to be, yeah, but no, 2-2. But I kind of have a feeling Ross McCormack won't start, so someone else is going to have to be stepping up to the plate tomorrow.
Okay, interesting take there. All right, Mike, over to you.
Okay, so I think that's the strongest 11-weekend field throughout the squad anyway, to be perfectly honest, even with Amber and Hoogle in the round. So this is Kit's team. I think they need to show how good they are, and I think they will, and I'm going to go for a 3-0.
Wow, Mike is going for 3-0. I love it, Mike. Could it be a hat-trick from Ross McCormack?
Well, I said Hugo earlier. I think Hugo's got to
I know. I'm kidding. I know. And you guys are right. He might, you know, again, he is dealing with an injury, so we don't know if he's going to play. But Mike, you just put a huge smile on my face predicting 3-0. I'm actually going to predict 2-1, and I'm going to go with two goals from Hugo Rodriguez, because, again, we don't know the situation with Ross McCormack. Hugo is due. I'm going to say he's going to score two. So I'm going to say 2-1 to Fulham. I think we can win this match. Mike has convinced me with his confidence, so I'm going to go with Mike. Even though he's going 3-0, I'm going to go 2-1 to Fulham. All right, and one bonus prediction, guys. And, David, you're not going to care about this, so you could turn your phone off or whatever, but I am going to predict the Patriots game, okay? Very quickly, this is for everyone that has sent me so many nice messages of wishing me and my team luck. I'm predicting the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl on Sunday 24-10. I think they're going to win by 2 touchdowns. I'm looking forward to this game. I hope I'm right. And, you know, I really hope I'm right, because I want to see the Patriots get their 4th Super Bowl ring. And, again, thank you very much to everyone who has been so nice to me, all the Fulham supporters wishing me luck. All right. All right, guys, let's wrap up the show. Before we go, Mike, again, as always, a pleasure, my friend. You were fantastic. Every show, you're fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Mike.
Yeah, cheers, Russ. Really enjoyed it. And going back, thinking about past Fulham teams and managers, yeah, it was a good show. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know what? You know, it's funny because I thought that was a great question. I'm going to try to think of similar questions like that to ask each and every week, you know, again, to get everyone more involved and a fun question like that. You know, that's a fun question. It was a great topic, and we got a ton of feedback on it. So I'm glad that I thought of that and that we can do that each and every week. I'm going to try to think of topics just like that. David, how are you doing? Thank you again for joining me, my friend. You doing better today? Feeling better?
Yeah, no, I've still got a bit of the old snivels, but you know these colds, they always linger on, don't they? They're a pain in the backside. But I was going to thrash around at tennis yesterday, but we had a mini snowstorm and hailstorm here. We had like 2 millimeters of snow, and that was it. You know, everything was off, as I said before. So I was going to have a run around. I had a run around on Wednesday playing football though, and got a bit of it out of my system. So good luck for you guys in. On Sunday, obviously, let's hope that they've managed to find the pump for the ball this time.
Oh, you had to throw that in there, David. You had to do a little Deflategate joke. Very funny, David. Very funny. All right.
I'm sorry.
That's okay, David. I've heard them all. Trust me, I've heard all of the ball jokes you can think of right now. Okay, before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cottage Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, I've mentioned this several times, you can now listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. Well, that's it for this show. It was a great show. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys, and thank you.
All right.
Cheers. Thanks, Russ.
Thanks, Russ. Bye,
Dave. Cheers.
Thanks, Mike. See ya.
Boys and girls.